Good morning. This is Barb Sayers with Sister to Sister in a Crisis. We're so glad you're with us this morning. We have some very interesting guests for you today. This show is Biz Buzz, and we are talking to small business owners and discussing their passion, how they got into their work, what's working for them, what's not, and how you can benefit from their experience and their services. So first off this morning, we have Maurice Washington, who is the owner of Executive Talk, which is a business TV show. He's been doing this for about 9 years, and I don't want to steal his thunder, so let's introduce Maurice right away. Maurice, are you there?
I am. Thank you, Barb, for having me here on BizBuzz. Very
Absolutely.
Excited to be
Good
here.
Good morning to you. We're what? Excited to have you. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Maurice, before we get into the business.
So just a real quick introduction. Maurice Washington, owner and operator of Executive Talk, is like Barb was saying, a business TV show. It airs live Tuesday afternoon from 3 to 3:30. Business consulting background, and decided to look for a platform that will allow a deeper reach, and that's where the TV show comes in. So that's a little bit about me.
Excellent. So what do you do with this show? You know, what kind of things do you like to talk about? How do you find the people that you interview?
You know, what I like to talk about is business ownership is pretty concrete when it comes to the metrics part of it. I mean, everybody has their own specific metrics as to how they identify, you know, if they're in a successful pattern or not within their business. What I like to discuss primarily is more the mindset and heart issues when it comes to business ownership. I think that's really the most impactful part that actually gets skipped over quite a bit. I think as business owners, we're taught to skip over how we feel and how we think and just keep on going through. And I think that really affects the overall business ownership journey as a whole. As far as finding guests, a lot of networking. I've been networking for quite some time, and bringing them on is a branding experience for their company to help them get their visibility and get their message out and deal with the weaknesses and threats within their business model, the questions that are constantly asked and that they don't have time to really answer in the one-to-one consultation. So this gives them just kind of that extra opportunity to get their name out there.
Absolutely. That's very important. And, most of us don't think about those metric things, so thanks for explaining that.
Yeah, no problem.
Once people watch your show, what do you hope that they're getting out of it?
You know, above all else, what I hope that people receive after watching the program, an opportunity to dig within. It's the opportunity to not disassociate, again, what's going on with their mind and what's going on with their heart and what they're actually feeling. I think truth is we don't know what the everyday business owner goes through on a daily basis. You know, we only see the fact that they're a business ownership and they're doing something that's kind of different than the average person is typically doing out there. That's all we see, but we don't understand that drive to from their home to or from their office to the actual appointment, the amount of stuff that's going through their mind. So I hope that they have an opportunity to deal with stuff that's going on with them and just kind of opportunity to get some answers out there as to why they could be thinking through maybe some possible breakthroughs so they can have that emotional freedom.
So you're hoping that something that they hear from your show will help them with the processes that they go through mentally in preparing for their own appointments and business.
Yeah, and their day and everything that makes, everything. I think what goes on within has everything to do with the metrics outwardly. I think metrics are just kind of a manifestation as to how good you feel. I think when a business owner is doing and feeling at its all-time high, you'll notice that it will show up in their business. They'll have better appointments. They'll have better interactions. They'll be everything will start to go a lot differently. But when a business owner feels bad, you'll notice a lot of mishaps, missing appointments, and so on and so forth tend to happen. And so those are the things I hope to deal with and hope to really resonate foundationally for business owners.
That's very insightful, and I think very, very true.
Thank you.
So, I mean, yeah, I think our listeners today just picked up a big nugget right there.
I hope so. And that's the point of the show.
Perfect. Well, if there was one word that could explain your entire experience with your TV show, what word would you use?
The word that I would use with my entire experience with my TV show is vulnerability. It's my first introduction to my whole entire life that I would really, really actually be truthful and say that I've been vulnerable. You know, you don't really know how humbled you get when you're actually on live TV and you're actually talking about something that is, I don't know, it sounds pretty awkward because it's not very common. So half the time, I'm trying to figure out if I'm going crazy. And obviously, if I feel like I'm that way, that means that the people who are listening will probably feel like, well, is what he's saying is for real? So there's quite the exposure that I've been in. Above all else, that's what I've been exposed of the most with myself is the vulnerability part of me.
Yeah, I think I get that. Even with my short experience here with radio hosting. I think I get that. And I think a lot of our listeners
things
will
tend to come out, right?
I think they'll relate to that as well.
That's it.
I want to ask Maurice a little more in depth how the journey that brought you to doing this show.
Sure.
Your passion. Yeah.
You know, my passion, and I guess I realized this, I didn't realize it until this about a couple of years ago, but throughout my whole life is represented one word, and it's teaching. I love to teach, and I love to see how teaching can manifest into somebody's life and actually help them grow. And I never really associated that factor that everything that I've been part of, even though my trail is really bumpy because, again, I was finding my journey as to who I was and what am I supposed to do with myself. Everything I did was always towards growth, but the growth was in that teaching. And so this TV show has allowed me to encompass my whole entire life into the rest of my life. So that's what inspires me the most is actually growth and emotional growth. I think that's really key is to, instead of being just mentally astute, be emotionally astute so we can move a little bit further and be foundationally stronger and stand firm in what we do. So that's I guess that's really the journey that I'm embarking upon.
Very cool. Yeah, that personal growth and emotional growth, that journey is so important for all of us. And I think a lot of us don't grasp it the way you have and you know, really incorporate that into their life and their passion. And I applaud you for how you've come along that journey and realized these things and capitalized upon them.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I don't know. It's been quite the journey. But, yeah, it feels good to finally be here.
Well, and on that note, what concerns you most about today's business owners? You know, having gone through this journey yourself, what are your concerns?
I see a bad trend happening with today's business owners. I'm starting to see more hidden pain than I've ever seen in my whole entire life. to be honest, the business owners are trained to be killers, meaning be a good salesperson, make a lot of money, and that's where you go. Know your metrics, know your numbers, which is all fine and dandy, which is at the end and beginning of the day important. However, the part that we don't understand is the business owner is taught to, he or she does not know how to potentially deal with the employee when you have your employee coming against you and they're right there. And these are the people that you spend time training, but these are the people that are at the same time could be having a hard time with. We don't know how that business owner is being affected from their home life as well.
Mm-hmm.
For a business owner, a bad month with employees and, you know, a family means a whole lot mentally for that business owner. And that's the part that we don't get to actually, and we don't actually ever talk about. It's the part that has to be kind of sucked up and taken in. And I think that's a very dangerous pattern that business owners are going through.
And you think that's unique to our time? Because it sounds universal to me for all time.
I think it's universal. I think it's something that we don't, I think that is absolutely universal. I think it's been edging up to this point where actually we're now seeing it. I think we're starting to see a manifestation of a lot of stuff right now in this world in general. But yes, it's, I think it's been heading up to this time for quite some time.
What do you think business owners can do about that?
I think it's, I don't know. I feel like the best thing for business owners to start doing is, kind of in the same vein of vulnerability, we have to start letting people know in a safe environment, you know, business owners, an opportunity for us to actually engage with each other to actually identify and open up to those issues. I mean, it sounds weird, kind of in a group therapy type of situation. I don't want to put it in that category, but nonetheless, at the very least, you can talk out your stuff instead of bottling up, because I think we end up, the way that it seems to manifest in our business lives, that we start to make a lot of compromises to get that pain away, and it just makes things worse. So I don't know. I think it's just time for business owners to actually really come to the table with what is going through their heads.
And I think I see a increased trend in people trying to address these things. The industry of personal coaching, business coaching, personal spiritual development is just exploding, and that can only explode if they have clientele.
So, sure, absolutely.
I think it may be turning that corner, so to speak.
Yeah, and I absolutely hope that it. I hope that's what we're seeing here, and that it means a lot. It would mean a lot to just our society in general, and just to the new development of this day and age that we live in.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What do you think the next major trend over the next 5 years will be that will negatively affect business owners?
I think this trend of trust.
Right.
You know, to take it in a broad range and bring it back to the scale of the conversation, when we see our presidential election this year, we are seeing I think a lot of people are in awe at this point as to what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And even on the biggest scale, when we're trying to trust something or somebody, we're seeing a lot of stuff on both sides of the story. And I think as business owners, and the reason why I say trust is a big issue is because if we think about it from a perspective of a client meeting a website designer, for example, if I was a potential client looking for a new website designer and I had a current website, I guarantee each website designer will tell me how bad the other website designer did versus where they can actually just make a small change to actually make it just a little bit better and say, hey, if it's for you, please call me. But if it's not, that's okay. But you're in good shape. But each website designer, I guarantee, would have some kind of, so at that, what that does for me is a clientele perspective. I'm like, well, what, do I hire all you guys to collaborate and fix my website since I don't know who to trust? I can't, obviously I can't trust my designer. So what do I do? So it creates this whole do-it-yourself trend, and that's the power of YouTube, is that it's teaching people to try to take that control back since we don't know who to trust out there. And so that's just my thoughts regarding something within the business world and just kind of the world in general.
Very interesting. With that in mind, what sort of advice would you give to business owners?
I would take them back to, the childhood reading book of The Tortoise and the Hare. I think society in general has forced us to speed up a lot of stuff and with technology and so on and so forth. And I think just as business owners, we're used to going at a fast pace because we're always, just as much as we're trying to get comfortable with second quarter, well, now we're here in third quarter and we're coming up on the end of the year. My thoughts are, my advice would be slow down, take the tortoise route, see what the pitfalls are of your business, and stabilize. Above all else, make sure your business is stable. On all fronts, make sure communication is stable. Make sure your processes are stable. Make sure you're consistent. Make sure that's stable. Make sure all the things that are just consistent in your business reign true above the speed of making money. And I think we'll find a lot more enjoyment in what our passions are supposed to do for our clients that we serve.
I agree, and I think that's a very good note to end on. We have reached the end of our session. I want our listeners to have a way to get in touch with you. Maybe they just want to talk to you a little bit more about these concepts that you've brought to our attention today, or maybe they want to be on your TV show. What would be a way that they could get in touch with you?
Always a email would be a good first start, just so we can interact from there. I would love to invite people to a studio audience to actually be there, actually view it live on Tuesdays at 3 to 3:30 Mountain Standard Time. My email is info@executivemoneyinc.net, and it will go directly to me, and I don't mind responding and calling and setting up a time to talk further or answer any questions.
So info@executivemoneyinc.com?
Yeah, executivemoneyinc.com.
Okay. And now you said Tuesday at 3:30. Where would that location be?
So Tuesdays at 3, you're talking about for the show, right, for the audience?
Right, to be in the audience.
Oh, 700 Calamath, which is in the Santa Fe Arch District. So I-25 to Santa Fe, or to 8th, and over there off of Santa Fe.
Okay. So 700 Calamath, Tuesdays at 3:30. Should they be there a little bit before that, or is that when you start seeding?
Yeah, everybody should show up around about 2:15 to 2:40. Everybody should show up at 2:15 to have a little bit of open networking. At 2:45, we go into the studio audience, and at 3:00, we go live and end promptly at 3:00.
3:00, you go live.
Uh-huh.
And end promptly at 3:30. 3:30? 3:30. Cool beans. Well, Maurice, thank you so much for being on the show today. It's been very enlightening, and I hope we can have you back sometime.
Yeah, I welcome that, and thank you so much, and keep on doing what you're doing, Barb. It's awesome.
Oh, thank you so much. All right, we're going to go to a break, guys. Thank you for being with us this morning.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. welcome back. This is Barb with Sister Enterprises. You are on Biz Buzz. We have with us today Nick Darling. And I love his name, by the way. Who couldn't like Darling?
My wife loves it.
Good morning.
Your wife loves it.
I know. I'm sure she does.
Good morning.
Nick comes to us from San Diego, and he is in the financial world. I do not have a ton of understanding for that realm, so I'm not going to go into a lot of description for him. But I do want to welcome you to our show, Nick, and
just hoping
that you can help those of us who are challenged in this area understand a little bit more.
Sure, absolutely. Would love to.
First of all, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and the journey that brought you to being in this industry?
Yeah, certainly. So I traded stocks and options out of high school for 8 or 9 years. And the way that I got hooked was my brother, when I was 16, had a penny stock. And he had been working at a grocery store, bagging groceries and saving up some money to buy a car. And he invested in a penny stock. And about 4 or 5 weeks later, the $1,500 he had invested was worth like $40,000. So I'm like, okay, how is that possible? How did that even happen? So I think that was the first thing that kind of piqued my interest. He was able to buy a nice car, and I was kind of ruined for the rest of my life in terms of having a fascination with the markets and how stuff works. So that was kind of my initial hook. And then, I traded for a couple years very unsuccessfully, and then about 5 or 6 years very successfully. And I actually transitioned out of the markets into starting a business with a couple other partners. And then in 2010, we sold. And in 2011, I got into financial planning, which is a totally different animal than, the trading. But that's kind of a little bit about my background and journey. And So
how did you get into planning from investing?
Yeah, so I had weighed two courses of action or careers, you could say. One was becoming either a marriage family therapist. The other one was getting back into the financial world. And I kind of loved the first idea simply because, I really enjoy seeing life flow through relationships. I think even more than money, our quality of life is really governed by our quality of relationships. But that being said, I had a friend of mine who was in this industry who invited me to interview with the firm that I'm at with now. And I was kind of hooked. I just kind of felt like this was the right direction. And so that's kind of how I got back into planning, or got back into finance, I should say, and into planning.
Wonderful. Nice journey. Well, let's go ahead and dive in to a little bit more about what this beast is.
Sure.
When people hear that terminology, financial planning, I think their eyes glaze over.
I don't really know.
So can you help us understand that a little bit more?
Yeah, certainly. So financial planning really deals with three phases that everybody moves through as they go through time. The first phase is the accumulation phase, which most people are familiar with. And in essence, during the accumulation phase, people are on two paths simultaneously. The first path is the wealth building path, which people are really looking to get an idea around where should I be putting my money, how should I be saving, what amount should I be saving, how can I do so fee efficiently, how can I do so tax efficiently, so at the end of the day, by the time I retire, I can transition from working to leaning on my nest egg to produce an income. And that really leads us into our second phase, which is distribution, which is now that I have a nest egg and I'm in retirement, how can I have that yield me the most income so I can enjoy it without any worries about running out of money, and so I can continue on retirement without having to go back to work, I should say. And then the final phase is really conservation. And conservation has to do with the estate planning conversation, which really speaks to people's desire to leave to their kids, to their causes, the most amount of money, and to the government, the least amount of money, to put it candidly. So those are kind of the three phases that everybody moves through. And when it comes to financial planning is really designed to help you get to retirement in terms of the wealth building path. And then separately is the protection path that everyone's on, which is addressing threats that could come up that could prevent you from, you know, reaching retirement. And that can look like anything from, you know, overpaying taxes to getting sued to having a disability, premature death. So anything that's protection related, that would include the will and trust work for business owners. It includes buy-sell agreements, succession planning. But that's probably the easiest way to conceptualize or understand planning, is to understand that there are three phases and that really all three should be planned for in the accumulation phase, because none of us are guaranteed to reach we're all guaranteed to reach the conservation phase, but not necessarily the distribution phase. So,
right. Well, you know, in listening to you describe this, it sounds to me like this is really something super important for all of us, and that we need to figure out a way to make this sound sexier so people pay attention to it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, it's...
Well, that's something you and I could work on.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
I wonder what might be holding some people back from achieving their financial planning success. This concept of it not being sexy?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lack of a sense of urgency. I think that's one component. I think another component is that there's a lack of clarity around what it is. And besides just this general sense of having enough money in retirement. And then I think another is just the context that we live in, which really, not by design, but by default, causes people to move forward in a compartmentalized way, simply meaning, you know, and you can tell me if this resonates or sounds familiar, or if you've seen other people do this, but people approach their finances in a way where, let's say, you know, somebody starts a new job, they have, you know, somebody who helps them with their 401k, a financial advisor who maybe helps them with 401k. They get married, somebody separately helps them with some life insurance. They buy a home, you have a mortgage banker, you have a real estate agent, they're helping them walk them through that particular process, right? And then perhaps they make some more money, you have another financial advisor who might be handling some, you know, non-qualified brokerage accounts. If you're talking with a business owner, it's likely you have a CPA, a business planning attorney. And what I'm kind of describing here is that people have a number of voices speaking into their life at some level regarding their financial plans, because all of these are financial decisions that they're making, even though they're not necessarily linked maybe to their IRA or 401k or brokerage account or whatever, but they all affect the net worth. So one of the things that I've observed is that it's very rare that people have all of their advisors sitting in one room at one time in the year to make sure that everything that they're doing is cohesive, right? And that really can result, a lack of a cohesive plan can result in a lot of inefficiencies where people find themselves paying higher than necessary, you know, taxes, fees, just a number of ways that people lose money. So I think that is a huge way that people, that prevents people from really achieving success financially. And I think another one is, you know, beyond, you know, delaying saving, is really approaching investments and retirement from the standpoint of chasing rate of return. I think that really harms people, because ultimately, oftentimes it causes people to take too high of risk. And I'm not sure, have you heard by chance of the Dalbar report?
The which report?
It's called the Dalbar report.
No, I don't think I have.
They studied investor returns over the last 40 years, and they found out that the average investor
gets under 4% in terms of a return, even though the markets do about 7%. And it depends on what markets you're talking about, but typically people use the benchmark of the S&P. So even though the S&P does almost double, they're receiving almost half of what the S&P does. And then that oftentimes has to do with their risk tolerance not being in alignment with any of the other financial elements that they have going on with their planning outside of, what they have maybe in their 401k or brokerage account. So people are oftentimes taking unnecessary or too high of risk, which causes them in a 2001, 2008 to, get out at the worst times and then get back in at also poorly timed. So in any event, I'm sorry for such a long-winded response, but those are a couple things I see that are preventing people from really reaching their financial goals.
Yeah, I find something very interesting. Don't boring me at all.
Good.
Yeah. What do you think is the most common misconception around planning? Is it this idea that you told us about having so many different advisors that may not be on the same page with you?
I think that's a huge part of it. Yeah, I think that's a huge part of it. And I think another misconception around planning is that, if you Google anything, if you Google, annuities or insurances or different types of insurances or annuities or investments, you're going to run into forums and blog posts where you have, tens of thousands, if not more, opinions on, a specific, let's say it's a product being good or bad. And I would really caution anyone from seeing products through that lens. It's too simplistic. And so the alternative to that is letting context define everything. So if I were to say to you, Barbara, let's say you have an option between a sports car or a 4x4 or a motorcycle, which one would you rather choose? Let's say I gave you the option of those three vehicles. Is there one that you'd have a natural affinity towards?
At this point in my life, I go for that sports car.
Sports car. I think I'd actually be with you on that count, too. And I think the follow-up question to that could be, too, is where am I, right? So if somebody asked me that and let's say I'm in the mountains, I probably want the 4x4, right?
Yeah,
or if I'm in the city, I could maybe use the motorcycle. If I'm on the highway, maybe the sports car is the most appropriate thing. The other analogy is with many people, if we're going to use a golf analogy, imagine being on the greens and you have your financial advisor there. And you have the selection of different clubs that you can use. Well, the clubs inherently aren't good or bad, but if the financial advisor, let's say you're putting and they give you a driver, that's likely a wrong move. But it had nothing to do with the putter. It had to do with where you are on the green. So I think in terms of misconceptions around planning, I think one of the biggest things is that there are good or bad things there in terms of products. All the products that are out there by the financial community, by and large, it's the context that makes them useful or not useful. So I would really shy away from, defining something up front as being good or bad. And I would say, however, that there are definitely bad practices. And I'll give you an example that we see quite frequently. So in case of, let's take an insurance product. Have you ever heard of index universal life policies?
Yes.
So just to maybe calm anybody's nerves who has that product is not inherently good or bad. It's just what it is. And it's very common for myself or other people at our firm to sit down with a client who has an index universal life or an IUL for short. And sometimes or oftentimes those products are run at illustration rates of 8 or 9 or even as high as 10%. And that is a bad practice because the market, let's say hypothetically, the market doesn't achieve 7 or 8 or 9%. Let's say it gets 5 or 4% during that period in which you own the policy. Is it possible that policy will underperform per the illustration? It's pretty likely, right? So the other thing that we see, which is a bad practice, again, not a bad you know, vehicle, but a bad practice in terms of our industry is where there's a lack of disclosure. And, you know, using the example of the IUL, there are very few people that I've encountered who own Index Universal Life who are aware that there's a cap rate and a participation rate. They're usually privy to the cap rate, but they're not, you know, they don't have an understanding around the participation rate. And those are basically two levers that the insurance company can use to govern the performance in the policy. And the cap rate, let's say, is 10%. All that means is that if the market, and we'll use the S&P as an example, goes up by 12, well, they get 10%. If it goes down, and this is oftentimes how they're positioned in the marketplace, if it goes down, you lose nothing. Well, the other side to it is that there is also a participation rate. So let's say the participation rate is, you know, 50% and the market goes up by 10 points. That means you actually, you know, enjoyed a 5-point move. So just some things to be aware of. And again, just wanted to highlight that there are some poor practices, but in terms of the products and what's available, I would really discourage people from looking at it through a lens of, hey, that particular product is good or bad.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
It really does. And I really would like to go more in depth in this with you, but we are running out of time, and I do want to have enough time to get your contact information out to our listeners. Anybody that has more questions on this or would like to talk to you about your services, we need a way for them to get to you.
Yeah,
so, how can they reach you?
Sure. So one of two things. They can either email my office directly at nick_darling@thewp2. That's THE, W as in white, P as in park, 2 as in the numeral .com. Or they can call my office at 619-684-8619 for a complimentary consultation. And again, the number is 619-684-8619.
All right. 619-684.
Yeah, 619-684. Forgive me here. Sorry. What is my own office number here? I typically use my cell. Give me one second. Yeah, 619-684 and 8619.
Hi, it's Barb again with BizBuzz. I want to thank you for being with us today. I am Barb Sayers, CEO and co-founder of Sister to Sister Enterprises. We are a marketing and strategic consulting firm. I hope that you gained some knowledge and insights from the show today and that you come back often. Make sure to tell all your friends and clients about BizBuzz too. You can connect with us. Excuse me. At my email at bsayers@sistertosisterenterprises.com, which is the word sister, the number 2, and the word sisterenterprises.com. My website will be up and running again shortly. It did break recently, and we weren't able to get into it, but it is www.sistertosisterenterprises.com, again with the numeral 2. My number is 303-524-2163 if you want to call and have a conversation with me. I think I have about 2 minutes left here and just wanted to talk a little bit about what funnel marketing is, because it seems to be all the buzz today. The biggest distinction of funnel marketing is in the way it allows you to move around on a website. A traditional website has a home page that allows you to navigate to wherever you choose on that site. But with a funnel website, you're first taken to what is known as a landing page or an opt-in page. And here you learn a little bit about what it was you wanted to know when you clicked on the site. Then you're asked to fill in a box to tell the site how to contact you so that additional information can be sent directly to your email account. From this page, you may be taken to another page that goes into more depth on that subject matter, or addresses another aspect of the problem that you're seeking a solution to. So in essence, you're directed by the site to the pertinent pages instead of you just clicking to any random page on the site. And I think that's the end of my time today. I appreciate you so much. Stay tuned for our next show in 2 weeks. Bye for now.